Welcome to a burning fire.
Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd.
Hosea was a prophet of God, listed among those who are called minor prophets, not because they were less inspired or their message less important, but called minor because the books they wrote were comparatively less in volume than others. The life of Hosea and the work he did among the people of northern Israel was approximately 120 years before northern Israel was destroyed by Assyria. After some 120 years or more of a united country, the God's people of Israel were divided into two nations, Judah on the south and northern Israel on the north. They coexisted for some two centuries until the 10 tribes of northern Israel were taken away into captivity by the Assyrians, a captivity from which they never returned as a nation. It is true that some who lived in that area fled to Judah when Assyria took the land and carried the names of the tribes forward with them. But of the two nations, Judah and northern Israel, both of which were rebellious against God, northern Israel was the worst. There was not one king of northern Israel that received good marks of faithfulness to God. Hosea was a prophet whose approach was less harsh and stern than that of Amos or Isaiah or Jeremiah or some of the others. He made a stronger appeal to the emotions of the people, a softer side of man. He pictured the nation as an unfaithful wife to God. And even so, God was willing to forgive and to take Israel back unto himself if they repented. Hosea's appeal was made for Israel to respond to the love of God rather than appealing to them with emphasis on their punishment if they did not. But he was no more successful than the other prophets in bringing Israel to God. Regardless of the methods the prophets used, Israel rejected the message. They were like those in the times of Jesus when he was here on this earth, who would not either hear John the Baptist or Jesus, either one, even though they were different in their manner. Now, we're not to think that Hosea was less precise in citing and condemning the sins of Israel. His love and appeal is not to be equated with an attempted compromise with Israel. He didn't do that. His indictments were God's indictments, sure and to the point. And inasmuch as the things written aforetime were written for our learning, let us profit from the past, because there are people in every age who partake of the same sins of Israel. Sometimes those who claim to be Christians are also guilty. Sin does not change, even though the way of committing sin may vary from age to age. When violators of God's law become numerous, history shows not only the personal downfall of the sinner, but the national disgrace and collapse as well. And because we want to be acceptable before God, and we're interested in the welfare of our nation and future generations as well as eternity, we need to know and avoid and turn from such things that humiliate a nation and bring destruction. Israel forgot the source of her blessings. Hosea 2:8-10, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore I will return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and I will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of mine hand." Now this is the first of 8 indictments Hosea made against Israel. How many today realize how abundantly blessed we are? How many give the glory and praise to God for such blessings? Are we very much different as a nation from the rebellious people of old? Fortunately, there are many who know that God is the giver of every good and perfect gift, James 1 and verse 17. But there seems to be an ever-growing number who think our land is great and prosperous and wonderful because of the might and the power of man. They too have forgotten the source of our blessings. And Hosea condemned Israel for lack of knowledge of God's will. Hosea 4 and verse 6, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God,
I will also forget thy children. And Hosea 6 and verse 6, for I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. Well, friend, this same tragic ignorance of God's will existed in the day of Jesus. In answering questions placed before him, Jesus one time said, ye do err, not knowing the Scriptures, Matthew 22 and verse 29. And how many know and care what God's will is in our time? Even among those who profess to care, there's an indifference toward learning. And in spite of the teaching to study, and that we shall be judged by the words of Christ, many content themselves in ignorance and complacency about their ignorance. And while truth frees, ignorance will enslave. Truth, in order to free us, must be known by us. We have to wonder how many who are irregular in Bible study periods are guilty of inconsistent and unfaithful efforts to know God's will. We are confident that no person, no group of persons, can be led astray by some smooth-tongued orator or egotistical professor-preacher when they know the message of the book. But when one does not know it, he can be led anywhere. Israel was indicted also because of her pride. Hosea 5 and verse 5, and the pride of Israel doth testify to his face, and therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. Is it not tragic that Judah would not learn from the things that happened to their northern relatives? But will we learn from what happened to both Judah and Israel? Proverbs 16 and verse 18 says, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Arrogance, conceit, egotism, self-confidence that is allowed to degenerate into self-centeredness are the companions of ignorance. When one is ignorant, he often smarts and chafes and blisters and pouts when the word of truth runs counter to him. He gets all puffed up. A knowledgeable person realizes the folly of thinking himself more highly than he ought to think. He realizes his dependency on God and is not so easily deceived. Hosea labored in times much like our own, with material prosperity being enjoyed, and with little concern for much else except having things. He made his message plain that the people were swelled with pride and plenty and self-sufficiency, at least in their own eyes. And Israel was also guilty of instability. Hosea 6 and verse 4, O Ephraim, what shall I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as a morning cloud, and as the early dew it goeth away. In Hosea 13 and verse 3, therefore they shall be as the morning cloud, and as the early dew that passeth away, as the chaff that is driven with the whirlwind out of the floor, and as the smoke out of the chimney. The people were not dependable. Reuben was lacking in stability, and it was said of him that he was unstable as water, Genesis 49 and verse 4. Satan can beguile the unstable soul, friend. James 1 and verse 6, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. The Lord wants us to mature and to grow strong. Only in this way can we stand. Christians are not to be the kind of people that just drift along with the crowd, but people who are steadfast with conviction. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, forasmuch as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, of course, there's a difference between steadfastness and stubbornness. Steadfastness is standing firm in the will of God. Stubbornness is just standing firm in one's own will, regardless of the will of God. But another sin of Israel, and it's often seen today, was the mixing of God's people with the sinful people of the world. The desire to be like those round about them had brought Israel down. Hosea 7, verses 8 through 11, Ephraim, he hath mixed himself among the people. Ephraim is a cake not turned. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he knoweth it not. Yea, gray hairs are here and there upon him, yet he knoweth it not. And the pride of Israel testifieth in his face, and they all do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all this. Ephraim is like a silly dove without heart. They call to Egypt. They go to Assyria. Now there are always great pressures upon God's people to follow the sinful ways of the world. The world wants to set our standards and determine our goals and choose our coming and going. But we must give heed, and come ye out from among them, as Paul said. 1 John chapter 2, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Paul wrote in Romans 12 and verse 2, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And James writes in James 4 and verse 4, ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of God. Now Jesus said of his followers, they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world, John 17:14. And this is a lesson that many of us who profess to be Christians give evidence of not having learned, or show an unwillingness to obey. Hosea also indicted the people of Israel for corruption. Hosea 9 and verse 9, they have deeply corrupted themselves, as in the days of Gibeon. Therefore he will remember their iniquity, he will visit their sins. Hosea 4 and verse 2, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood toucheth blood. In the 4th chapter and the 11th verse, whoredom and wine and new wine take away the heart. Corruption takes many forms, such as lying and stealing, rioting, being immoral and unchaste, foul language, drunkenness, bribery, dishonesty, homosexuality. Why, the most corrupted people of all is described in Isaiah 5 and verse 20, woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Friend, to corrupt simply means to defile and to make impure and unclean, to change from a state that is sound to a depraved mind and a putrid state. To be corrupted is like the old man of Ephesians 4:22. This is the reason we're to put him off and put on the new man. The reason there are corrupt nations is because there's so many corrupt people in those nations. Jesus said, even so every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. Israel was also indicted for backsliding. Hosea 11 and verse 7, and my people are bent to backsliding from me. Though they call them to the Most High, none at all would exalt him. How the heart of God must have grieved as he saw the nation that he had nourished and preserved and protected and guided, for whom he had made provision, to see them slide away from him into the paths of unrighteousness. Do we think that he is any less displeased to see Christians turn back from that which God has delivered them and turn away from him? God will not drive us back from him. Satan can only tempt us back. Friend, if we go back, it is because of our own choice. We can choose to backslide. And it is obvious by the words of Hosea that backsliding is not only possible, but it is characteristic of a religion of words apart from deeds. The people were religious, but they were not righteous. Rendering lip service and not full service, it is not what God expects, and it's not what God accepts. And the last of these indictments concerned other gods. Hosea 13 and verse 2, and now they sin more and more, and have made them molten images of their silver, and idols according to their own understanding, all of it the work of the craftsman. They say of them, let the men that sacrifice kiss the calves. Israel sinned by worshipping gods of their own making, which were not gods, but idols constructed according to their own will. Like the people of Athens, to whom Paul spoke many years later, and the Gentiles described in Romans chapter 1, and the heathens throughout the world today, they serve not the true and living God. But around us also are many idols. Friend, whatever is allowed to come between us and God, and the worship of God, and the learning of God, and working for God, becomes an idol to us. One of the Christian's most prominent idols is secular pursuit. Parents put other things before the church, in spite of Matthew 6:33 that says, "To seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." And then their children imitate them, and the spiritual welfare of a generation after generation is neglected. Are we to think God overlooks our idols any more than he overlooked Israel's idols? It is a costly and deadly shame of our time of abundant blessings how so relatively few put the things of God the first in life. If he is considered at all, he is at best given second interest with so very many. Surely you won't want to be of that number. With Israel, it was repent or perish, and we look upon their history with sadness, because they would not heed the prophets, and they would not listen to the warnings against their unrighteousness. Israel preferred the stiff-necked attitude, and they pressed on to personal and national disaster rather than to turn from their sinful ways. Well, with similar choices before us, will we be any wiser? We can follow the way of truth and be acceptable before God as an individual and as a nation. But before that is a reality with anyone, obedience to the will of God must be the mark of our life. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.